We expunge the embeds and drop our doll bodies. Kazitio's got the tech. Zombie Takeout's got the tech. Hello and welcome to Zombie Takeout, the B-movie and cult movie show. I'm John.
And I'm Scotto.
And before we get to this week's movie, some feedback from Bodo. He said, damn it, guys, did you just make me pay $3.67 on Vimeo to watch a family fight between Greg and Steven? I don't get that reference. Please, I'll watch Demolition Man 1,000 times. I did like the old videos, a.k.a. MST3K, Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Yeah.
By the way, last week I meant minus 20 brains. This one, minus 19 and a half brains. And on to the movie that Bodo is referring to, which is from 2008, Mock-Up on Moo. Of course, that brings us to the impromptu plot summary, sponsored by Delusion, without which this movie could never have been made.
The truth. Okay. And also brought to you by Scraps. You can construct an entire story out of them, just not maybe a 2-hour story.
Technically 1 hour 50, but it felt like that extra 10 minutes was in there.
I involuntarily checked out, we can say, by the last 15 to 20 minutes.
Uh-huh.
I was dead asleep.
I nodded off a little here and there. I'm a bit sleep deprived the last couple of days. So yeah, that
woke up with the head on the desk and the credits going. Shit you not. I went back to finish it up today and saw why. But anyway. all right. So we have the story of, it's actually the true story almost.
For the most part, yeah.
In fact, there's an episode of Drunk History that covered this story. I don't know if you've seen it.
No.
It's fantastic. I mean, it's about half this story that they cover in, of course, like 10 to 15 minutes.
At the end of
Drunk History.
Toward the end of the credits, he talks about like what was fictionalized. There's like 3 points that were fictionalized.
Right, right. But I highly recommend Drunk History, period, because it's fantastic. It's people talking history, drunk off their ass. I mean, and this, of course,
I need to check that out one of these days. I've actually never seen it.
So, and of course, the best part is they have the actors
reenacting it, yeah.
It, like, syncing up to their dialogue. So if somebody burps while they're drunk,
nice.
You know, Susan B. Anthony will burp, you know, while talking. Just a lot of good gags like that. Uh-huh. But anyway, the story of L. Ron Hubbard and is it Jack Parson?
Jack Parsons and Marjorie Cameron.
Right. And it's about the founding. Their story was more about the true story is more about the founding of the Jet Propulsion Laboratory. Yeah. I believe the dude from Stranger Things played L. Ron Hubbard in the Drunk History.
Nice.
Like they get people in, you're like, what?
Hopper, the cop.
Yes. Nice. I believe that's who they had playing him. The best casting they've ever had, by the way, is Hitler being played by Weird Al Yankovic.
Yeah. Okay.
We're just with that crazy stare and just like the, yeah, great, brilliant stuff. But, but yeah, they sort of founded a cult.
Yeah.
While founding the Jet Propulsion Laboratory is what happened. And, according to this movie, L. Ron Hubbard really did like, swindle Parsons out of pretty much like everything. His fortune. He ran off with his mistress. I should also explain that his mistress was his wife's sister.
Oh, okay. They didn't cover that in the movie.
Yeah. So yeah, he has an affair with his wife with her sister. And of course, that wrecks
Jimmy
their
Hendrix
marriage.
Song just popped into my head.
And then, so he has a relationship with their sister. They carry that on even after the marriage. And L. Ron Hubbard comes along swindles him out of his life savings, runs off with his mistress, or ex-wife's sister, and they take off for Florida to find Scientology. But in this movie, he goes to the moon to find Scientology. Honestly, I guess the moon is a metaphor, really, for Florida.
Yeah,
if you think about it, because and it is tied with the space program still. Parsons,
the part that I'm still wrapping my head around.
Parsons gets kicked out of the Jet Propulsion Laboratory. I think partly because of McCarthy, but also because, well, I mean, he does hook up with Crowley, and they, you know, he's made a part of the leader of his cult, pretty much, and he's running that out of his house. And yeah, they truly believe in sex magic, and that they create, you know, rockets using that sex magic. Yeah. And it's really hard to explain what the fuck they really believed in, but in reality, he, of course, is, you know, blown up in an accident, and some people believe he was murdered. This movie, according to this movie, he has faked his death.
There were three things that they pointed out that were fictionalized. As far as we know, Jack Parsons didn't fake his own death. Marjorie Cameron was not kidnapped by a sex cult. And Lockheed Martin is not one person. But I got a kick out of that.
Yeah. It was like, is that really, you know?
I looked it up. It was not named after. It was the Lockheed Company and another company, something Martin, that merged to form Lockheed Martin.
That makes sense. And so in this movie, someone decides they need to make a launch pad on the Vegas Strip to... Well,
Hubbard was trying to get a satellite put into orbit with some mirrors that would help him either, I think, attack Earth or siphon energy from Earth or something.
It didn't really make a lot of sense.
So he wanted to enlist Lockheed Martin to do that, because Lockheed Martin.
Right.
And so he sends down Agent C, Marjorie Cameron, to seduce Lockheed Martin to do this. She gets back with Parsons in the process, and somehow she ends up finding... Well, continue. I don't want to do the whole summary.
Right. So they need to... It was kind of like they needed to do a launch pad in Vegas that was going to look like a tourist thing, like an amusement park or amusement ride, but it was really masking the fact that they were going to be running weapons and tech up to the moon.
Yeah. Because Hubbard wanted to attack the Earth.
I think. I'm not really sure what Hubbard wanted to do. That wasn't really clear, was it?
Like, I think probably wanted to get rid of the what do they call the Thetans, or what they're typically called, but
sticky figments. So he wanted to take more of the true believers, or the people that were clear, or whatever, and get rid of the people that were not. I think that sort of makes sense. He sends down an agent. Why he would send? Was he not aware Parsons was alive?
I don't know.
Like he had. I think he was surprised to find Parsons still alive, or else he wouldn't have sent, like, his ex. I think it's his ex-wife, actually.
Okay.
Down.
We should explain. This movie is made up of about 10% original footage and 90% found footage. And by found footage, I don't mean the conceit that you see in a lot of movies now. I mean, he literally found the footage in a studio basement.
Right. Let me try to wrap this up somehow. I know, good luck. It's
been looking forward to this for a few hours.
He sends his pretty much Parsons' ex-wife down to get this job done. And so she swindles Lockheed Martin. And then I'm not sure why she had to swindle Parson, since Parson is just kind of on his own. Mm-hmm. But I guess it would just help to have him on their side.
Well, he is one of the founders of JPL.
But he figures out who she is, of course, even though they said he had amnesia for some reason, and I'm not sure why. But so, of course, he recognizes his wife, and he converts her to his side. They resume their relationship from before he cheated on her, and I guess they start a sex cult themselves and take over the world, leaving L. Ron Hubbard out in the cold.
Well, except then she finds Aleister Crowley underground.
Yeah.
With his monsters.
Which just leads to the sex cults.
Well, yeah. And also sending them up to the moon to take down Hubbard.
Did they go to the moon to take down Hubbard? I didn't gather that way. I didn't gather that from the clips.
Okay. It seemed like they sent the monsters up to the moon to get rid of
Hubbard. Oh, okay. Well, because I mean, and we'll get into this.
Yeah.
We have this. They start a sex cult. Hilarity ensues. That's pretty much it. They start a sex cult, and that's the end of the movie. Yeah.
During the 90s, Eric Davis told director Craig Baldwin about the connection between Hubbard and Parsons through the Babylon Working, a series of sex magic rituals performed by the two. This became part of the character's backstory in Baldwin's previous film, Spectres of the Spectrum, which prompted the Church of Scientology to send Baldwin a letter detailing their own account of Hubbard's time spent in Pasadena. He decided that he couldn't write a better script than what the Scientologists had already given him, and he incorporated that into the story of this movie.
So, the found footage, I mean, that there, it's a cool idea.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't just willy-nilly throw any fucking thing you feel like throwing in.
I think it worked really well for about a half hour. Maybe an hour. I said for the first hour, I was enjoying it. After that, it just got old.
Well, I think the first half hour, I was like, this isn't just it, is it? Well, let's look at this structurally, you know, storytelling-wise. Mm. He spent 40 minutes on that paper thin exposition.
Yeah.
The first 40 minutes of the film is just, this is the backstory. It, like, they don't send her down to Vegas until 40 minutes in.
Right. And I did get a kick out of Hubbard saying he captured Xenu with a spoon.
Yeah.
And just the whole long exposition of Hubbard, it was kind of entertaining because the ideas, because he talks about Scientology a lot, and the ideas are just so out there.
No, that's the problem. The exposition is just people talking, you know? It's just, there's no, it's just, this is what happened, and
it's monologuing.
Up to speed. And yeah, it is a 40-minute monologue, pretty much. And for some reason, Maggie only responds in, like, movie titles for most part, or other cliches.
I got a kick out of it, particularly the spoon thing, and when he talked about his plan to use the moon to sell advertising.
Oh, yeah, nice.
Yeah. The Battlestar Galactica theme was in there too. That was nice. But yeah, it was a long monologue. When she gets down to Earth and we get Parsons' monologue, that got a little tedious.
Like, there was no need. Right. Oh, my God. Towards the end part, when Parson just goes on for, like, that's when I nodded off, actually. And he was talking like they were just delivering their lines like they were stoned out of their gourds. I mean, everything was like this after a while. And I'm like, well, no wonder I fell asleep.
Well, yeah, the actor playing Parsons or voicing Parsons was a little okay. The actress doing Marjorie, the voice of Marjorie, because the body actor was different. It was all dubbed by different actors.
Right.
But Cameron and Hubbard, beautiful overacting. I really enjoyed how they were showing the scenery.
There just isn't enough of them, you know?
Loved Hubbard's, as I put it, pseudoscience babble about, you know, the supposed science behind Scientology. Also, the dialogue, and I don't know if we talked about this before the show. I don't know if we've gotten to this during. Is the dialogue is out of sync.
Yeah.
Baldwin claims that was intentional because the footage he was using was out of sync, so he didn't want his footage to stick out. It would fit in better.
But his footage doesn't fit in with anything anyway. I mean,
I don't know. Admittedly, it probably made things a lot easier to take it out, to leave it out of sync.
It's laziness is really what it came down to.
Partly that, and I think it was partly an interesting choice. I think it would have been distracting if that was suddenly perfectly synced when nothing else was.
But the stuff that he's using, the found footage, the majority of it did not have... It had little to do with what was actually going on in the film, you know?
Yeah.
Like, the deck of the Enterprise. I mean, it literally was like, I found this cool thing, and I'm just going to place it here.
Well, there's an explanation for that. Baldwin drew footage from an archive of thousands of films in the basement of his studio space, describing the process as availableism, using available works and creating associations between them, rather than expending effort trying to find the best image. In Mock-up Anu, he focuses particularly on educational and industrial films.
That is really all you have to say. There is no effort expended in this at all. Well, no,
there's effort in drawing the connections. It was weird and random. I enjoyed it. Reminded me a lot of Night Flight. I've talked about Night Flight before. I grew up on it and loved it. So, you know, that's the title of the episode. So, you know, I like that it made so little sense. Particularly because it was about ridiculous bullshit that makes no sense.
True. I think this would have been a really interesting movie. Mm-hmm. If he had made a movie here. But he didn't make a movie.
Well, yeah, it technically is a movie. It's a moving picture.
It's just a montage. It's scraps. It's things that he just threw together around a very... paper-thin story.
Well, the paper-thin story was mostly true, actually. Yeah. And I kind of enjoyed seeing what he was going to pull out for the different footage. You know, it was, you know, listening for interesting themes, and I enjoyed that. You can't tell me I didn't enjoy that. You didn't. That's fine. Enjoyed seeing...
What's there to enjoy by it, though? Like, oh, yeah, I've seen that before.
I enjoyed the randomness of what he was going to pull out of his ass next.
This was just like Oliver Stone was off his meds. That's all it was. I don't see any higher thing here. There's no... I mean, this is just...
Well, no, there is no higher thing. It was a satire of Scientology and Parsons' ridiculous sex cult.
Sure. And that could have made a great film if he made a film. But he didn't.
We still don't have to worry about putting this on the rec list.
No, not at all. Oh, come on. If this is the first time I think I've ever just fallen dead asleep to a movie.
On to brains.
It's a bad movie.
I think we're on to brains. Anything else?
Let's see. I'd say the one good thing I could find about it, of course, would be his taste in music.
Well, yeah, there was some good, like, the Battlestar Galactica theme. Goldfinger leading into the Vega scene. I got a kick out of that.
I don't know how the Goldfinger thing fit in, but oh well. I guess she was a special agent kind of thing. It's a very loose fit. However, I mean, he's going to get half a brain just for King Crimson.
I didn't notice Crimson. I saw him in the credit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was very nice.
Where was it?
Crimson King.
Oh, yes. It's been now I remember hearing it. It's been ages since I've heard that song.
A little bit of Doors in there, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, it had a very Brain Salad Surgery feel, the whole film, actually. Mm-hmm. But I think the plot of Brain Salad Surgery is better than this film. That was only, of course, a 40-minute album.
I will agree that it was too long.
Too long.
Somewhere between a half hour and an hour would have been better.
I think, somewhere, even if he just went a little over an hour, maybe. I mean, an hour at most he had here. Hmm. Instead, we got an hour 50.
On the brains. I enjoyed it. I think it's worth checking out, so I'm going to give it a 4.
Do not check this out at any stretch of the imagination, guys. Unless, I mean, I guess this is something you put on the background of a party. If you guys, I mean, if you're not really paying attention to it, because there's nothing to pay attention to. It's just random footage. I mean, I'm giving it 1.5.
All right. And what have we learned?
I need to load up before watching some of these.
And I learned that one of the founders of JPL was insane.
Oh, yeah.
I had no idea.
Oh, yeah. Check out Drunk History. Tell it.
That's it for Mock Up on Moo. Until 3 weeks from now, when we'll be reviewing Blade Runner with special guest Roberto Suarez. Mm. Yeah, on the 25th, Monday the 25th, is my birthday. And I don't want to post an episode on my birthday, so we're taking an extra week off. Until then, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are.
There you are.